great. Beauty.
Hello, and welcome to Third Degree Burn 2025. I am Tim Elliott, and I have a full crew today as our first show for the new year. We have, around the table, Brian Hughes.
Hi! Hey! How's it going?
Nigel Spink.
Hello there.
John Hyatt.
Hey, everyone.
And John, do you want to introduce your surprise guest?
Yeah, my husband Fred is joining us because he loves Alpha Flight. So when we started talking about it, he's like, oh, I'd love to talk about it. So, Fred?
Hi, everybody. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Look forward to getting into some Canadian magic.
Hey, is this your first podcast, Fred?
This is my first podcast with you guys.
Okay. All right. Well, for we've been teasing this for quite a while. We've done a couple lead-up episodes to the Road to Alpha Flight, so we're finally going to get into Alpha Flight issue number one with this show. So we're going to be covering Alpha Flight number one. Sorry, I haven't done this in a while, so I'm a little rusty. if you haven't, our previous episodes kind of leading up to our episode 147, 148, 149 covers the X-Men issues leading up to this. There were a few we did not cover because they were not burn related. There's an Incredible Hulk annual that happens before this, annual number 8 that he co-wrote. There's a Machine Man number 18, Marvel 2-in-1 number 84, and then there's Hulk 277 through 279, where various members of Alpha Flight appear. But none of those had anything to do with John Byrne. They were just the characters. So we kind of avoided them.
Hmm.
And most of that's been covered on our previous episodes. Anything before we kind of get into start covering the book? We're just going to be covering the one issue because it is a double size issue today. So
yeah.
All right. If there's no comments, Nigel is going to recite the synopsis for us.
All right. Well, shall I start by just mentioning the details of the comic? So, as you say, it was the first issue of Alpha Flight, cover dated August of 1983. We'd been waiting about 3 years from their last appearance in that X-Men story. And the cover picture on this issue, of course, as you would expect from a number one, basically shows all of the members of the Alpha Flight that are going to be appearing in the stories, hopefully, plus one or two of the other well-known Marvel characters of the time, such as Spider-Man and the X-Men, Fantastic Four members, Daredevil, etc., although none of those will actually appear in this story. But yeah, it's a nice cover, and it's the sort of thing that attracts you and you think, oh, I must get that. Now, let's have a look. The production team, if you like. So the Alpha Flight was created by John Byrne, and he is writing the story, and the artwork is by John Byrne, and I believe the inking is also John Byrne at this time.
Yes.
Yep. It's lettered by Joe Rosen, coloured by Andy Yanchus, edited by Denny O'Neill, and, as it says, approved by Jim Shooter. Big Jim gave it the stamp of approval. Right. And what we have to remember here, although it's now 1983, is that this particular story takes place just 2 weeks after the events of X-Men 139, 140 with the Wendigo story. So, which at the time, because I thought, oh dear, that's a bit of a that's a bit of a nuisance for sort of continuity, because I thought you've got to remember that as you're reading this story, most of the other titles, of course, that were out at the time have moved on by 3 years, our time. So nothing's going to relate properly to what's happening here. But nevertheless, it is just maybe it's Alpha Flight centered and it's all takes place in Canada. So it doesn't really affect anything else at this stage. Right. So We just move on and we'll have a look at the synopsis. The title of this story is Tundra. So, the Prime Minister of Canada informs James MacDonald Hudson that Department H is shutting down their national superhero team, Alpha Flight. Mac reflects upon what will become of the various team members, notably the rising stars from the backup groups such as Beta Flight and Gamma Flight. Donning his Vindicator armor, he flies home to Ontario to tell his wife, Heather. Meanwhile, in the Northwest Territories, a man named Richard Easton conducts an ancient ritual, which he summons one of the power great beasts, an entity known as Tundra. In Quebec, Jean-Paul Beaubier visits his sister, Jean-Marie, at Madame Dupont's School for Girls. He tries to get his sister to shed her modest Jean-Marie personality in favour of her more free-spirited persona, Aurora. Jean-Marie detests this side of her nature and openly rejects Aurora as if she were an entirely separate person. Later, at the Hudson residence, Mac receives a call from Alpha Flight's former government liaison, Gary Cody. Cody tells him about a bizarre phenomena taking place at Resolute Bay. Vindicator flies off to respond to the emergency. Heather, feeling for her husband's safety, activates a signal beacon that goes out to all the former members of Alpha Flight, including upcoming recruits Puck and Marina. Puck is working as a bouncer at Corky's Tavern in Toronto when he receives the call. Exuberance overtakes him, and he rushes out to track down Hudson. In Newfoundland, Marina carries on a conversation with her adoptive brother, Dan Smallwood, when she too receives the signal. She dives into the sea and begins swimming towards Vindicator's coordinates. In British Columbia, Professor Walter Lankowski perceives the summons as well and is surprised to find that there's still a need for Alpha Flight. He transforms into Sasquatch and races to aid his old allies. Meanwhile, Snowbird arrives at the scene where Tundra has risen from the earth. Standing several stories high, he commands the very power of the environment, assaulting Snowbird with a barrage of rocks and debris. The rest of Alpha Flight finally arrive, including Snowbird's close friend, Michael Two Young Men, also known as Shaman. Vindicator begins attacking Tundra with a steady stream of electromagnetic energy, but Snowbird warns him that such an assault would adversely affect the environment. As Vindicator scales back his attack, a Canadian Armed Forces helicopter airdrops Sasquatch on top of the behemoth. Sasquatch begins tearing into Tundra's side until the great beast swats him away like a fly. Snowbird tells Shaman that only the forces of nature can successfully stop Tundra. He uses his magic to summon a great deluge, which greatly wears away large portions of Tundra's form. However, not enough to actually disable his threat. But then Marina arrives, riding on top of a travelling water spout. Shaman uses the excess water that she has brought to finish Tundra off for good. His body erodes away until there is nothing left but a bed of silt and a large salt lake. Realizing how effectively everyone worked together, Vindicator offers to re-establish Alpha Flight as an independent superhero team. And that basically sums up this first story for Alpha Flight.
Very well done.
Nicely done, yeah.
As I say, the synopsis there, it was okay at first, but when we get about halfway through the story, it sort of got even more brief.
Yeah, it skipped some stuff.
When they started fighting with Tundra and how the different people arrived. Because it just said there that, you know, oh, the rest of Alpha Flight suddenly arrives. Well, they do, but they don't all arrive en masse. They arrive individually as the pages, you know, as we go through the story. But yeah, that's basically what happens. They have to stop Tundra, which they do. And I don't know about you guys, but I thought for such a large menace as he appeared to be at the beginning, they defeat him quite easily.
Just what did you think?
Sorry? Yeah, just add water, yeah. And he'll dissolve away, yeah. I thought there'd be, you know, I thought he'd give him a little bit more of a challenge, yeah.
Well, I think the story was really to kind of reintroduce Alpha Flight.
Yes,
Tundra, yeah. Was kind of a background. I mean, this is the creature of Tundra is one of the things I like about Alpha Flight because it draws heavily on the mysticism of Canada. And later, I think they kind of get away from. But that's what I like about when Ethan Byrne was in it. He was doing a lot to do with, and they were separate. You know, this was like their own superhero team, their own country. They were separate from the New York guys. But I think he's just there as a means to get them all together. You know, introducing these two new Puck and Marina. They're new. Never seen them before. So they give a little more screen time than the rest, which is the one thing I found kind of confusing is. Shows Heather getting these punch cards and she's putting them in this, looks like she's putting in a floppy, but she's sending out these signals to everybody. And it says that they all have these little implants in their, behind their ear or in their head. Well, we see Puck being activated and we see Linkowski or Sasquatch and Marina, except hers is on a necklace for some reason.
That's commented upon.
Note about that. Yeah.
They don't explain it.
Yeah.
We don't see anything for North Star and Aurora as to what, you know, I'd like it maybe a page or some panels to establish that she gets the signal and then she snaps out of her one personality and into Aurora.
Yeah.
But we just see them flying and she seems.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Because the previous time we see them, she's still Jean Marie. Yeah.
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 Yeah, but she just kind of passed out.
That's true.
She's caring for her.
And that could have been her changing into
she could have come round as Aurora. Yeah.
Aurora, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I really like the detail of the bar that Puck was working in. You even see the ceilings of the old, it's an older building that's been there for a long time.
I think Byrne leans a little heavy into the Canadian speech. He can do it, but he puts A on everything.
It was really popular at the time.
It was.
You had right around that same time, you had Doug and Bob McKenzie.
the Red Green Show, if anybody's ever seen that.
No.
I heard of it.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the... So this is about the cover. So cover is very busy, got a lot of characters on it. Are you familiar with the Marvel Age cover that featured Alpha Flight?
Yeah,
I've seen it. Yeah.
And my thought is, which one do you think would have been the best cover for Alpha Flight number one?
I gotta pull that up now.
The Marvel Age, which just basically has the Alpha
just
Flight,
the Alpha team. Flight team, yeah,
basically in the same positioning, style, and pose as the cover we got, but it just doesn't have Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and the X-Men, Spidey, and all of that on it. So, what do you guys think?
Well,
and what do readers think as well? Look it up. I don't remember which Marvel Age it is, but it's an easy to find.
It's Marvel Age 2. I'm looking at it right now. I don't know. It's a nice cover with Vindicator pointing and Maria. It's kind of it's nice. But my guess is let's pull in some people. So we're going to put in Spider-Man. You got Colossus. I mean, you got Cyclops. You got Cap. You've got FF. I don't know why Daredevil is in there. In order to get them to buy it, because you're thinking, this has got all the superheroes in it.
Yeah, I mean, we have to remember this was 1982, and you would want to see established Marvel characters. If you're bringing in a whole new team, you want to see the established people welcoming the new kids in, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And to show that they're friendly, because we've only ever seen Alpha Flight battling X-Men in the early, in 139 and 140, we see them as kind of like the villains, although they get softened in the story, but we always see them fighting in the beginning. Here we see established families of Marvel welcoming them in, like, hey, welcome to the party. You're the good guys, like us, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's because on the cover, they're saying one side superheroes, this is a job only we can handle. So you're kind of leaning into the Canadian-ness that this is our territory, we can handle this, and they're kind of pushing the other guys aside. It's like, you know, we've got it, you know, we can take care of our own country. So I think you're right, Fred. It is kind of a handshake of the established Marvel guys are saying, welcome aboard, you're good guys now, go take care of your problem.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see the Alpha Flight be the cover, though, for me.
Well, I'm curious, did many people fuss because all these guys are on the cover and not in the book?
I don't know. We've seen that kind of stuff before, but I don't know. Once I saw the Marvel Age cover, I was like, oh, that was a great cover. I wish that was the cover of the number one. But, you know, I know why they did it, but I still think it's a nice cover.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they should have put it in as a poster.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, I still like this one, though. It's
Yeah, it's nice. When I picked up my copy, I think I started collecting them. I think, Burmer's going to leave in maybe 5 or 6 issues. So I kind of came aboard late. But I picked it up, and that's back when you would not sign the cover. You would not. Uh-huh. So I opened it up, and Burn's signature is at the bottom of the splash page. That's where they used to sign, you know, just in pen. So it was like, I was lucky that I have to.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Mm.
And now, of course, they'll just slather all over that. They'll just write it all over the cover.
What did you guys think of, I mean, it's not just the art, but some of the choices that he made in here. And I'll say, for example, when they do the flashback of the X-Men, it's, you know, a single tone color of everything in yellow and blue. But also, and I'm trying to remember which Fantastic Four issues were coming around out the same time this was coming out, because the...
I did look that up. Yes, it would be more or less at the end of their trip into the negative zone.
Okay, so I think we were seeing a similar thing in the Fantastic Four, where his backgrounds were few and far between. Not as many backgrounds as there were in other books in the past. This one just stark colors, like the greens and the orange and the red, as background colors for, you know, just the regular things. So, you know, like when he was in the bar or in other places, they did seem to do enough background when they're inside the or on the campus of the girls' school. Mm-hmm. You know, he did, you know, some details, but it really seemed like he started doing less backgrounds and just doing the foreground characters. He also had a much thicker line starting around this time in his artwork. That being said, the character artwork is just gorgeous.
It's nice, especially Tundra. Yeah. Tundra is very nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
Is Tundra like devoid of color, so it's white, or just it's white, all black?
I think it's just supposed to be white, just like snow.
Like Tundra.
It's hard to tell because the twins' hair color is supposed to be black, apparently. But I always thought they were silver colored or white, like Magneto's.
Just shiny black. Very shiny black.
Mm. But maybe Tundra's supposed to be black too, and it's just that's his way of creating when something is so all black and encompassing. I don't know.
But when Sasquatch starts taking out chunks of him, that is colored green and brown. It looks like turf and grass and greenery.
Yeah.
But the rest of him is, and that just maybe his. Maybe he is, you know, he is a mystical thing, so maybe that's his way of manifesting himself. And when he starts to dissolve, you see some brown, like the mud. It looks like the mud is in there, and it's kind of him coming apart. Mm-hmm. So,
I think they did a great job of giving scale to Tundra. Like, you really felt how massive he was. And it was just a great use of the artwork to represent that scale. I thought that was fantastic.
Especially at 3-panel where he's walking and growing larger as he walks.
That's just me after like each bite of food. Okay, was this the issue where the trope of somebody saying, how can something so big move so fast started?
I don't know if that's where it started, but there it was. And I thought about that, Brian. I'm like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Oh, who said that?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
Oh, right.
Walked away.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's well, they,
there's something similar with Puck. When Puck punches the guy or says he moves, sudden movements are quick and graceful, much more than you would expect from his stunted limbs. So it's kind of the reverse, you know, you would think that he is a little person, he would be awkward, but he's not.
Mm. Yeah, the guy that he winds up hitting at the end, I swear that's what Danny Masterson's going to look like when he finally gets out of prison.
Oh, wow.
It does look a little bit like him.
Yeah.
Oof. I kind of think it was funny that in the issue that Puck isn't really there during the fight. He kind of shows up at the end going, you know, kind of huffing and puffing like, oh, I finally caught up with you guys. And I thought that was really, it was a great way to like go, look, all of you other guys have special abilities. You can fly. You got there quickly. But, you know, hey, remember the little guy, basically. I can't do that, you know, person. Yeah. And I thought that was a great way to kind of give some humor to Puck, you know, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a comedy, like a sitcom sort of situation. Yeah. Yeah. He arrives at the end. Okay, I'm here. Oh, we're finished. Yeah.
That was on my notes. Then I realized I can't answer my own question because Puck tries to get transportation and they're like, no, we don't know who you are. I've seen Alpha Flight. You're not one of them. Basically, go away. And he beats the guy up, but then he leaves. But then Sasquatch has a government helicopter. I thought, well, how did he get that? And I realized, they know he was Alpha Flight. He was known.
Yeah.
Puck was not. That's why he couldn't get.
Mm. And plus, I think Walter works for the Mounties anyway, if I recall correctly. He already
is
works
he a Mountie?
For the
government. Is he?
Well, they all are, actually. They're auxiliary.
Yeah.
Well, but he and Snowbird actually, in their civilian identities, work for the government. In that
I know she was a police officer or a Mountie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that also ties in with the little joke at the end where Puck shows up and he goes, yeah, we're just thinking about a new name. And he goes, no, I busted my butt to get to Alpha Flight. You're going to call it Alpha Flight. He's like, yeah, okay, we'll call it Alpha Flight.
I want to be an Alpha.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll make a nice mascot. Okay.
You know, one of the things that I found funny, I hadn't read this since probably the 80s. So, you know, going back and rereading the issue, I found it funny that Department H had taken the whole base apart. Like in the first artwork, we see, you know, things pulled out of the walls, cables laying all over the floor, all this stuff. But somehow the big computer at Heather and Mac's place is still up and running. I would have think a government agency would have been there first thing to take that away. I just thought that was kind of funny.
I think they would take his super suit because I'm sure that government paid for that. They would ask for it back.
I said to John last night, I'm like, okay, they shut the division down, but he wears the suit to go home. Like, what the heck was that all about?
he made it. He built it.
Mm.
But with government funds, he didn't make it. He didn't pay for that himself. He did the prototype he did for the old company he was working for.
AmCam.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if they took his suit, we couldn't have a show or couldn't have a story. But
as my father would say, it was in the script that way. Just leave it alone.
Don't question it.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask everybody here, did everybody read this fresh off the shelf when it came out?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I did.
I did not. I was late to the game on Alpha.
I was, you know, maybe 2 years late for me. But.
Wow.
Yeah, when I thought about doing the podcast, I had to dig out the two remaining boxes of comic books that I have, and I kept Alpha Flight all these years, and the first like 12 issues are still sealed in the plastic bags that I bought them in when I was trying to catch up back in the mid 80s. So,
yeah. Well, I think 83. I had just gotten into comics because I started collecting comics late. I did not collect them as a kid. So 82, 83 is when I probably started collecting them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my reasons for not getting it is that it just wasn't in the sandbox that I was accustomed to, you know? I mean, I knew them from some of them from the X-Men. I didn't read 120 or 121 at that point. I'd only read 139, 140. And so I knew just a few of the characters. And so I think I just wasn't as interested to get into it then. And then in, I guess it was 1987, I really started kind of ramping up my collecting and collecting of John Byrne. And it was that point where I, you know, picked up every issue of Fantastic Four that I didn't have that Byrne had touched, and then got Alpha Flight at that point.
When I kind of discovered Byrne, I was picking up anything that he, especially if he was drawing it, anything he drew, I would pick it up. That's why when he would leave a book, I would hang out for a couple issues and I would jump ship too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had read Byrne, the X-Men, since he got on to the book. And so I didn't read 120, 121 initially because I was a newsstand. Most of my stuff came from newsstands. So, you know, back then it was sporadic.
Wait, I thought you were Fancy Dan that had the subscription.
Oh, I did later, but not at that point. So when they announced that the book was coming out, I was pretty excited about it. So even though I was 18 and I was about ready to graduate from high school, I still was interested in reading the stories, and I liked his storytelling. Fantastic Four was doing well for me at that time as well. So when it came out, I was really excited. I was a little bit thrown by going from a group team book to all of the single issues, but it was cool because we were learning about the characters. So it was a whole different format of doing it. So I was pretty excited about the book to come out, and the characters I thought were cool. So I was looking forward to it.
Well, that was that part of Byrne that's always don't give them what they think they want.
Yeah.
And so this is the one time you see the whole team together
for quite a while.
For the rest of the series, there's you know, barely a time when they actually do all get together. I mean, were they all there for the 12th issue?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the first time since this issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was one of the things. For a team that never gets together.
That's right.
That was one of the things that I thought that sort of disappointed me about Alpha Flight was what he did with it, because I was probably one of many who thought, oh, this is going to be like Canada's Avengers, for example. And that's what I was like hoping for, looking forward to. And I mean, yeah, like John said, though, the first few stories where it was only about one or two of them, They were okay because, as you say, we were learning more about the characters. But I didn't expect that to continue so much. I was hoping for more, sort of team action, which didn't happen. And it's almost though as if Byrne, I don't know whether to blame him or not, because you know how he didn't originally want to do this.
No.
But he was kind of forced in a way because they said, well, we're doing it anyway, and they're his characters, so he must have thought, well, you know, I should do it, otherwise they might make a right mess of things. And so he begrudgingly said yes, but it's as if he said, but you know, they're not going to get what they think they want, I'm going to make sure of that. And so in a way he did it, he changed it on purpose to spite us all. And so some of the things he does later in the run, not going to go into it now, but I wasn't so happy about. But at the same time, I loved the artwork and everything. So it was kind of like, I loved it, but I was disappointed at the same time. Yeah.
It subverted your expectations.
Yeah. Mm. Mm, somewhat. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it was a big shock, of course, not reading it sequentially, but when issue 12 came around, I'm sure that was a big shock to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Well, we don't want to spoil that, so...
No. We'll talk in depth about that when we get there, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
From what I recall, for me overall, I thought the story was cool. It pulled through really quickly, introducing the characters. Because I'm pretty sure that I didn't read any of or many of the guest appearances in other books, especially if they weren't books that I was normally reading already. And if, like you, Tim, if it wasn't John Byrne drawing it, I probably wouldn't have picked it up if it wasn't a regular book I was drawing or reading. So, and then again, newsstands, they didn't always get everything, so I might have missed that. Some of those other appearances, I when you mentioned some of those other ones, I was like, oh, I don't even remember that they had more appearances. I thought they pretty much were X-Men 120, 121, and then 139, 140, maybe something here, and then next was Alpha Flight. So,
yeah, it's a lot of, there's a, and I did this for when I think we covered, I think we did episode 130, 49. Sequentially, their appearances are X-Men 109, X-Men 120, 121, Hulk Annual 8, which he co-wrote, that just has Sasquatch in it. Then it's Machine Man number 18, that's DeFalco and Ditko. That's just Sasquatch, Aurora, Northstar.
Then it's X-Men. If it was Machine Man with Ditko art, I never would have got it. I don't care who was in it.
X-Men 139, 140, which we've already covered. Then it's Marvel 2-in-1 84, which is Vindicator, Shaman, Sasquatch, Aurora, Northstar. And again, that's DeFalco and Ron Wilson. And then I think the reason why they're Incredible Hulk 277 to 279 is because that involved all the Marvel superheroes. Everybody's in those issues.
That's when Hulk becomes, gets his brain back and gets pardoned, I believe. Yeah. So that's I seem to recall a Marvel team-up annual with Spider-Man and Alpha Flight. So that must have come after this started.
That's
then?
Later.
I'm looking right now. I think it's actually a regular issue towards the very end of the Marvel team-up run.
I thought it was an annual, but it's a long time since I read it.
Let's see. Marvel Team Up Annual 7 was Alpha Flight. Yeah, and that's the one that has a giant cobra on the cover.
Yeah, that's it.
Was it the collector on a flying carpet?
Wow.
And Spidey in the black suit, was it?
Yeah, he's in the black suit.
Black suit, black Spidey.
That's after Secret Wars, so.
Yeah.
Now, and that brings up an interesting question. You were saying that the events in this book take place like 2 weeks after that issue of X-Men, which was from 1980?
Late 80s,
And so Alpha Flight as a book was kind of out of time with the rest of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So that would explain why they were not included in Secret Wars, at least the first one.
Yeah, but you could have easily between issue 1 and 2.
By the time Secret Wars came about, which was, 85, weren't it?
84. So it's 2 years.
They were established, weren't they? Because I think, although it never actually said so, if I'm right, even when we look at issue 2 later, it never says we are now back in the normal Marvel time. But you just have to take it that they are, because it seems to then relate to everything else that's going on. So it was just for this story that we were back in time, as it were.
And remember, Marvel has that sort of a sliding
time scale.
Everything kind of is happening at the same time, even though it's progressively moving. So for them, 3 years really wouldn't have mattered much. I mean, it was 3 years for us.
Yes, three years for us.
But maybe not necessarily for our characters.
No, but if you think about what would have been happening in the other titles that were already established, it wouldn't connect properly. So, even by Marvel time, in my way of thinking, it's off for this issue.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because...
It doesn't matter because it doesn't reference...
It only affects Alpha Flight, yeah.
Yeah.
My note prize to that, Nigel, is that the Beyonder's device shows up in Central Park. So it captured all the New York heroes.
Yeah.
And Alpha Flight wouldn't necessarily come down because that's not their area. So So it's they would have stayed.
The signal was too weak.
Because it didn't get drawn in. Daredevil, you know, he wasn't there, and there's a bunch of other people that weren't.
Yeah, not everyone was sucked in.
So, Brian, you're really good at sussing this kind of stuff out. So I'm looking at James and Heather's house, and we know how John Byrne likes to utilize TV sets.
Oh.
For that, do you know if this is from something? Maybe it's from a Canadian show.
Remember how he does that? It hadn't even occurred to me. The school that he did was an actual place, but I don't know where it was. And on Mac and Heather's, they just showed the inside, didn't they? Or did they show the outside?
The front of the outside. See the outside. See the Heather house. In the living room.
They give the actual address.
It's on a steep hill.
And yeah, I think I looked it up hill. When we covered it before.
Ottawa. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 138 Laurier Drive.
It's a steep hill, but it looks like the bug has curved the tires so that they're pointing in the right direction. If it loses.
Well, no, I think they're turned into the curb so that it doesn't roll away.
That's what's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's that level of detail he gave it.
The
tires.
And Heather's collection of macrame plant holders is pretty impressive, too.
So I wonder, Brian, I mean, that would be kind of interesting to try to find out, isn't it? Because he likes to do that. I mean, the friend's apartment he used and...
The way the block is set up, it looks almost like San Francisco.
Kind of does.
I wasn't aware of anything, so I'm gonna have to sit there and dig, look. I mean, the fact that he actually put an address there. Has anyone looked at the address on Google Maps?
I'm looking right now at the actual one on Zillow. It's not for sale, by the way, but it looks nothing like what's he's drawn. It's just a one-story house.
And that's in Northwest Edmonton,
Ottawa.
No, it's in Ottawa.
That's weird because they get the same address in Edmonton. And they also have it in Windsor, Ontario. That's weird. And then East Ottawa. Oh, and Ottawa. Okay, so, I mean, it's showing up in a couple places. But, yeah, that's not a hill either. There's not a hill for that. Like, they're showing this street is, like I said, it's like San Francisco.
Yeah.
There, but when you look at that address on there and you do a little quick look around, it's flat.
That's a mild hill compared to someone who just was in San Francisco. That's we walked up some hills that were like about 45 degrees.
So out of the original team here, who's a favorite for each of us? And I'll start. Like, I loved Aurora. And I love the pages where they're she and North Star are flying through the air and her doing her loop-de-loops and having fun. And then he's actually the serious one compared to Jean-Marie, who's like ultra serious. Now compared to Aurora, he's saying, but I always love Aurora's playfulness. And I did think it was kind of a neat take to have her be a split personality and to have the dualness of the character. I thought that was a really cool touch to a superhero. And the way when he drew her as Jean-Marie, man, was that quite a stark change from Aurora. But yeah, Aurora was kind of my favorite out of the group at the onset. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Mm-hmm. Mine would be... Go ahead, Nigel.
Oh, okay. I was going to say... Well, I liked Vindicator, but I think that's because I knew him the most because he was the first one to appear in X-Men to begin with. But of the rest of the team when they formed, I liked Snowbird.
Hmm.
Yeah, I liked the fact that she was more than just like an ordinary woman. She was mystical and connected to the like the Indian mystic legends and everything, and that she had that connection to Canada as well as being a shape changer, so she could turn herself into the different animals of Canada.
That she wasn't just a shape changer, she was tied to the country, the land, so that she was more mystical instead of just being a mutant. I think and we discussed this, I think, early on they call her a mutant, I think, or they it was kind of they were thinking that maybe she was a mutant when she was showing up in the X-Men books.
I never really considered her to be a mutant though.
Well, I think that's before he fleshed her out here. We didn't know about her because at that point she was just changing shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. But I like some of the drawings of her in the different issues that Byrne does. They're really nice.
They are.
When he does the full splash page type shot of Snowbird. Yeah. So she was probably my favorite in from the team. Yeah.
One of mine's been I kind of have Sasquatch and Puck, but I like Sasquatch mainly because he's kind of Hulk adjacent, and then especially when we find out his backstory, and then later we find out the real backstory. Won't spoil that either about his origins. And I just thought that it was an interesting way, especially the way he's drawn as kind of this big orange monkey thing. And then Puck is just because he's just a regular guy who has trained himself to embrace his condition, you know, to not, you know, I don't have a disability because I'm a little person. I've made that a strength. So they alter his origin later. I think it's after Burns left. And I wasn't too happy with that. But I liked him as just a scrappy. He's kind of the Wolverine of the group. He's kind of tough as nails. He's scrappy. He's kind of has a kind of a mouth on him. And he's apparently drawn. He's hairy. He does that same kind of hairiness that he used to do in Wolverine. So, yeah.
For me, I'd have to say Vindicator was my favorite from the beginning. But that's because, I mean, out of all the characters on the team, he was the one that was the most Marvel of the characters. The rest of them were superheroes. You know, they were superhero characters. But he was the one that just felt so Marvel compared to the rest. I don't know if that makes any sense to the rest of y'all.
It does.
I found myself looking forward to what was going on with him more than anyone else as I was reading them. And then, of course, you know, well.
So I flip-flop back and forth between two characters as well. I really liked Shaman's character, but I'm a sucker for any magical user kind of thing. And I loved his ability, and I liked that he had a flaw. And that gets explored more as the stories go on. But I thought he was a great character. I also liked Heather, especially Heather, who, let's be honest, I mean, she was so young when this, you know, when she meets James McDonald. And yet she is the most commonsensical of the two of them. You know, he charges right in and she's like, oh, let me get you some help to do that, honey, you know, kind of thing. Like, I liked her kind of just grit to stick to it and to really be a support for Vindicator in her own way, especially in these early issues.
Yeah, I liked Heather from the beginning. Just I hate what they did with her later. Just, you know, and I'm talking after Byrne left the book.
Mm-hmm.
Probably one of the reasons why I stopped reading that and what they did with North Star. But, you know.
Whew. Yeah, some of the later stories get a little strange and some of the characters they introduce are a little really off the wall. And I'm like, and that's kind of why I stopped reading. I was like, this is getting a little bit too far reaching. And we're talking about a comic book, but some of the characters were just really kind of strange as the title went on a little bit. I think I dropped out around issue 49 was the last issue I have.
Yeah, there was and I don't remember if it was actually an Alpha Flight or if it was an annual or one of those special crossover books. It was the one where they actually revealed maybe it was special. No, it wasn't that. But it's where they reveal to that North Star. Well, they made it out like he was dying, and they, you know, said he wasn't mutant; that he was fairy. Oh. And I just thought that was so insulting, considering what was intended in the first place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that like in the early hundreds or right leading up to there? I remember I wasn't reading at the time, but I remember chatter about that, and as I was hanging around stores and stuff, lingering, and when I was like, oh my gosh, what? No way. I was like, I'm not going to read Alpha Flight either.
You just don't alter your headcanon, and you, because if he is not a mutant, what does that make Aurora? They are brother sister. Yeah. So
yeah,
right.
Well, they could have said that she's not his sister then, or well, who knows?
Yeah, that's the way they read. Yeah.
Remember, all mutants became inhumans at some point.
So this is the Scarlet Witch Quicksilver thing again.
Oh man. Well, does anybody else have anything else they want to bring up?
Yeah, you know, when you were talking about, yeah, go back to the Hudson household. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you know, but Heather's T-shirt, she's got something on written on it. Where the heck is High River?
High River.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to anybody?
Must be a Canadian thing. Heck,
might be a Canadian thing.
Where the heck is High River? I'm sure Byrne must have got it from somewhere. I don't think he'll have just written it on for the sake of it.
Yeah, I was trying to look through
the questions
on the website, and I just couldn't get through enough of them to get any real answers.
Well, it says High River is a town in Alberta.
Oh, right. So that's probably...
probably where she's from or where Byrne's from or something.
Yeah, yeah, where the heck is High River?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Mm. It is a place then, yeah, in Canada. Mm.
Yeah, it's run Calgary. Yeah,
here I thought it was going to be like a rock band reference of some type.
Yeah, right.
it's going to be like one of those, you know, you see shirts that say "Keep Austin Weird," things like that.
Yeah, okay.
One of those kind of, you know. It's Austin, Texas. They have a saying "Keep It Weird." I think they say the same thing about Seattle. Don't they say "Keep Seattle Weird"?
Mm-hmm.
So actually, an angry fan wrote a letter after Alpha Flight number one to scold Byrne.
Death, tell us about that.
For a line of dialogue where the barroom drunk tells Puck to keep out of the way or he'll get his hair mussed. And then the guy puts in big letters, "Hey, Byrne, Puck is bald." And all Byrne could respond with was, "Sigh." Oh, man.
Well, if anybody's interested, you can buy a Where the Heck is High River t-shirt.
Is that right?
On Redbubble. So oh, I don't know if it's related to this, if it's related to this issue, or if it's something, but it's a black t-shirt with white writing, just like in the comic.
Just like,
Must have been a thing, and still is, apparently.
Might have been, yeah, back then.
One thing I have to say, I love the nosy neighbors downstairs from Heather and Max's place. the Kravitz of the Alpha Flight.
The Georges, yeah.
I always love that stuff. And everybody usually gets, like, you at least get one or two that have the googly eyes when you get those types of characters.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
But they were just the older couple, and you kind of expected the husband to be the,
Yeah, he's Abner.
Well, they're the landlords, like he says. They pay their rent. They don't have loud parties. Just leave them alone.
Yeah. And so he flies in the window, you know, kind of thing. Doesn't every husband bypass the front door and the stairs and just flies right in the window of the second floor apartment?
But did she even notice that there was a green woman that went in there?
Exactly.
Well, it seems like, I don't know how, I mean, I know Newfoundland's a little remote, but she walked openly around her own hometown, and nobody seems to think that it's odd that she's has webbed hands and huge eyes and she's pale green. But
I think they cover some of that in when they talk more about her backstory in later episodes. I think they'll discuss that a little bit.
Do they discuss where the Dorothy Hamill haircut?
It's hair.
Well, yeah, and that's the only thing. Is it hair? But she definitely got the Dorothy Hamill style there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the... is anybody watching Creature Commandos on HBO?
Yes.
Are you caught up?
No.
Okay. Well, this is not a spoiler, but you know there's the... whatever the the Aqua Girl on that show is. Whoever, I can't remember her name.
I can't either.
Have you seen her origin episode?
No.
Okay. I won't spoil things, but it's similar. She's similar to Marina. She's, you know, somebody who can only breathe water, except she can only breathe water.
Oh, yeah. I knew that part because she had the bubble with her all the time.
Right.
But, she didn't really interest me. I mean, Marina didn't really interest me as far as the Alpha Flight character. She's probably the one I was least interested in altogether.
Yeah, you know, for me too, Brian, looking back, it was like, oh, you know, it was a little bit intrigued at first, but then I was like, I just not interested. Maybe it's because it was such a predictable storyline or something that just didn't seem that interesting or unique for her character. Or maybe it's because there were just too many. It's like, oh, I don't need to spread about. But yeah, I kind of didn't catch that much interest either. I mean, what was interesting for me was when, you know, they explored a little bit later and Submariner came in. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, you know, I was like, not off the bat that.
Yeah, we're going to say probably.
I'm interested.
Yeah. Probably Byrne wasn't too thrilled with her either. he only used her, to create that first story, if you like. And then after that, she kind of moved out her Alpha Flight title.
Yeah, it kind of feels like maybe he created her just for that water purpose.
Spout. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then other people other writers kind of took her on from there, yeah.
Well, they
thank God they never said she talked to fish.
You can talk to fish.
They could have, you could have taken out Puck and Marina and then maybe found another way to solve the problem at the end and had them introduced late in later episodes. So you had just the core team we were already used to fight Tundra. And then you bring in these two new people that, you know, it's established that they were ready to move up. They were, they graduated out of Beta Flight. But then everything got shut down, so they had nothing to do. I can't agree that Marina is not as developed, but I'll say something that's probably controversial. I don't think Vindicator is all that developed.
Yeah.
He's kind of like superhero guy, and that's about it. He doesn't really have much in the way of backstory other than that he's a scientist and, you know, he lost his job. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys remember, the reason, you know, I mean, Byrne put these guys together simply so that they could survive a fight with the X-Men.
Right.
And so he didn't give a whole lot more thought to anything about them. So everything that he did here, he was really, you know, fighting to find something interesting to do with them. It didn't come easy. It's not like the other books like Fantastic Four where he would just, it would come out of his pencil. You know, it just came to him so easily. This was an effort for him to get the stories out.
Yeah, and you know, as a team to battle the X-Men or to, you know, like we had in 120-121, they were great. I mean, the visual is good on their powers, and the minor, you know, the amount of interaction we got with them was cool. And in 139-140 even, it still worked out fairly well. That was a really good story, that two-issue arc, I mean, fighting Wendigo and going into that. So, yeah, so, you know, if they just popped in every now and then as guest stars, that would be great. So, yeah, trying to put something in behind her, that's a lot of work to that. And so kudos to him for breaking the team apart so that he could do that in the first, you know, year's worth of the series, so that he could figure out who they are and establish them and give us something about them.
I think he did for someone who doesn't really want to do the book, I thought he did a great job. Establishing the characters and really grounding it in Canada and coming up with some interesting ideas. I love the idea we get in this of the great beasts that exist in Canada and how that plays out. And that's the kind of stuff I really was disappointed when they got away from it and they became just more of a generic kind of superhero team when they weren't fighting the more Canadian things.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right.
Well, any final words?
Not on that, no. I do have a thought on something else, but wanted us to finish the book before I change subjects.
Go for it. I think we are
Well, no, yeah. Does anybody else have anything else they want to say?
Nope.
No, not really.
I was just going to ask if anybody had watched Section 31 yet.
Yes.
Yes.
I have not.
No.
I fell asleep twice. My wife got upset with me because I fell asleep and she was forced to keep watching it.
I would be mad too, Brian. Tell your wife that we support her.
Yeah. I mean, what I saw, I was bored with. There's just nothing to grab onto.
I heard it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
It was all right. To me, it was just like, it's Mission Impossible.
It didn't feel like Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest problem. Since we're talking media, did anybody watch all of Skeleton Crew?
No.
No.
Okay. No, we just started.
We watched one episode, and I'm not sure we're going to watch any more.
That's exactly what it's
all right.
That's what I did. I watched the first episode and thought, no, this is kids' stuff, and I've never watched it anymore.
Loved it.
It's kids' stuff.
It's okay for what it is. I wasn't crazy about the way it ended. They obviously ended hoping for another season. I don't know if they'll get one or not. But
It was
Prodigy in Star Wars land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. I'm like, no. Exactly. Although I'm looking forward to getting into Silo, if anyone's watched Silo.
I've heard good things about that. I haven't watched it, but I've heard that's an Apple TV, right?
Yeah.
My wife watches it. I haven't heard it,
but I've heard good things. Anybody watch Landman?
Yeah. I'd say about 5-6 episodes in. And the house that they use is just like, 10 minutes away from my house.
Wow.
The actual house?
Yeah. So I went to college with Taylor Sheridan. He and I were friends. We did a bunch of projects and stuff in college. I haven't talked to him in 30 years, though. And he changed his name. His name was originally Gebler. So it's like whenever he's filming something, I'm always like, I ought to get in touch with him, at least see if I can get Christopher a free internship or something, you know? And this one's filmed so close around me that I'm just like, well, I'll probably just walk into him at Sam's or something, but you know.
Well, the only thing, I liked it because I like Billy, but there are parts of it I thought I could done with, but I like Billy Bob in it. But
he is real good.
They portrayed them going from Midland to Fort Worth like it's a 2-hour drive.
Yeah.
They're just back and forth. It's like, no, that's a long drive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and there's subplots I could do without. Yeah, the wife and daughter.
I agree. Yeah. Got tired of them.
Yeah.
I just like Billy Bob putting out fires. That's all I wanted. Not literally putting out fires, but putting out fires. You know?
Love it when he's telling everybody how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the son and the widow, that's so messed up. Now it sounds like we're talking about a soap opera.
Well, it is a soap opera.
Yeah. Yep. Is this what the other shows are like? Yellowstone and 1883 and 1923?
They're very soap opera, yeah. I got tired of Yellowstone after about the third season. I gave up.
Yeah, I hadn't watched any of it, you know. It's funny because this is the first Taylor Sheridan, something I've ever actually watched. My father-in-law discovered him in Sicario because he wrote that.
Yeah. My wife watched Lioness and she liked that a lot. And she also watches 1923, whichever one has got Harrison Ford on it. She likes that.
Yeah.
And Helen Mirren.
Crazy. But I'm having a hard time lately finding stuff that actually really interests me and keeps me interested. That's one that does keep me interested. But I mean, there's a lot of shows and movies that we've been watching lately, and I'm just like,
I haven't even finished Squid Game. I've watched 2 episodes, just haven't finished it yet.
I was going to ask if anybody were watching that. Yeah,
my wife's watching it.
I've watched nearly all of them. I've watched the fifth one the other night, so I've still got 2 to go. I'm enjoying it. It's different enough. Yeah. But I've read somewhere that there's going to be a Squid Game 3.
Yeah, they've already filmed it,
right. So I'm going to say so this season two is probably going to end on a cliffhanger. Maybe.
I think it's really season two and three is really season 2.1 and season two. Yeah. It's kind of one season split up.
Yeah, so it's going to end on a cliffhanger. I'm expecting that at the end of episode 7, yeah.
No. Did you watch Tokyo Vice that I recommended you watch?
Oh. No, I've never really watched. I think I watched one episode of it. But...
It's good. Well, the first episode's actually directed by Michael Mann.
Yeah, he produced the show, but it's I like it. It's good.
Hmm. Unfortunately, it's not getting another season. And it looks like neither is Warrior, which was a really good show. We do have a few weeks before we get Captain America Brave New World. That comes out 2 days after my birthday.
It's February time, yeah.
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 And Thunderbolts.
I'm looking forward to that.
FF. And Superman is in there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to Superman a lot. I want to see something from Fantastic Four.
That'll be a Super Bowl commercial. I guarantee you'll have one.
I'm sure we'll get another Superman one, too. Yeah. And then Thunderbolts is what? Is that June?
It's not too far after Captain America. I think a couple months.
I'm looking to see when that
might be May or...
We'll have a lot of...
May 2nd.
For coffee and comics coming up, won't we? In the next 2 months.
Yeah. My wife has already said, now it's not because she doesn't find it looking interesting or anything, but my wife is not going to be going. It's just the going to the theater aspect of it, the comfort of it and all that. None of them are comfortable for her anymore. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, it's drop. Nola was telling me yesterday that she read some article that the average moviegoer, she said, how many tickets do you think the average moviegoer buys in a year? And it's 3.
That's about us.
Yeah. We're lucky if we get that number in.
But, I mean, the thing is there interest in Thunderbolts?
I don't think so. I think Captain America is drawing so much attention because of all the reshoots and the budget that's ballooning. It's kind of overshadowing Thunderbolts.
And now, as I understand it, it is the shortest Marvel movie that's been made.
So it's only 2.5 hours long then?
I think Cap's under 2 hours. They chopped it down to like a minute 50
just
or so.
Under
or
2 hours.
50.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's,
yeah.
They've chopped quite a bit out of it.
Yeah. So it's not the shortest, is it? That's still the Marvels, isn't it?
The Marvels. Yeah, it's about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, I thought it was the shortest from what I was reading.
No, I think it's still longer than the Marvels. But...
Yeah. They haven't finished editing it yet, so who knows?
I didn't realize that Liv Tyler was going to be in it, and now I'm seeing that.
Ooh. Yeah, she's reprising her role, and so is the leader. I can't remember that actor's name.
Yeah, Tim Blake Nelson.
Yep, he's coming back.
The leader's back eventually.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well,
let's wrap it up.
This is the part everybody's tuned out already. They've stopped talking about the book. Turn it off.
Yeah.
That's fine. We rambled. Well, Brian, why don't you kind of take us out and tell the folks where they can get a hold of us?
I don't know if they can get a hold of us anymore. I can't remember the last time we actually got an email feedback. Now we do get feedback. We get feedback in Facebook. For the most part, and for all that, we do appreciate everybody that mentions us. But our email, if you just would happen to write us a nice long missive, all the people that had been writing us are actually part of the podcast now.
They keep getting brought on the show.
Yeah. So write us at gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's gottagetburned@gmail.com. Or you could write us a 5-star review at Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes. Should I mention iTunes, the fun we've been having?
If you want to mention, I really haven't been diving into that because
we're having some
trouble.
It's not just us, and it's not just Two True Freaks.
a lot of podcasts.
Many podcasts, their shows are just dropping off there. There's like five of our episodes on there right now, and none of them are recent. And so if people were getting the art podcast off of iTunes, they're not getting them right now. Now the podcatchers are getting them. You can always pull it down from our website. So it's available in all the other ways that people would normally get it. And we can tell that people are actually pulling it. But something is really weird going on there. And it's something that apparently they are working on. They just don't have a fix for it. I think they probably transferred over to AWS and ran into a lot of problems with that. And they're not willing to tell us about it since, you know, they're putting up our stuff for free. Anyway,
yeah,
that's how you get a hold of us if you want. Email us, iTunes, or just let us know on our Facebook page.
Facebook's probably the quickest response to something.
Yeah. I try to make sure that our show shows up in any John Byrne related group that will allow us to post a link. So, you know, let us know how you found us and just let us know what you think and what you want to hear. But as you can tell, we're talking about John Byrne. Now, with the Superman movie coming out this summer, I think that we'll probably have some Superman coverage. What do you guys think?
Yeah, we should put, like John said, some cocktails and comics. Mm-hmm. Mentioning maybe a movie reaction, same with FF.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Well, anything else?
No, I want to thank everybody for coming on. We haven't done this in a while, especially John, because I know you've been busy. I want to thank Fred for coming on.
It's always a pleasure to have, Fred.
You know, always a pleasure to, more the merrier. We don't care who comes on. But I want to thank everybody for spending Sunday afternoon with us, or Monday morning in Nigel's case. Mm-hmm. And, kind of glad to be back, get back in the swing of things now that we've got all the holidays behind us.
And besides, I mean, this will be, later on this year, our 10th year. Can you believe that?
Well, I was thinking that when you were showing that Chris was turning 18 and graduating. I thought, I've kind of seen this kid grow up, because when we first started, he was just a little tadpole. So.
Yep. And we've all grown. And the show's grown. And
yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yep. All right. Well, I've said my piece.
Well, for Third Degree Burn, I am Tim Elliott. And again, I want to thank everybody on the panel here. So thanks, everybody at home, for listening. And stay tuned for more shows.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you all later.
Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Good day.
Good day.
But wait! There's more!
I'm Kirk Greenfield, and I want to say thanks very much to the guys for allowing me to jump in and give my thoughts here. I was not available when they recorded the body of this episode. Had a family emergency, but here's a couple of comments. I'm taking a look at Alpha Flight number 1 in the trade paperback called Alpha Flight Classics. So I believe that it reprints all the artwork, but I don't believe that it has any of the text or the letters pages or any of the additional materials. In general, I was very pleased with this issue when it came out. I was looking forward to it, and I think I saw an ad for it in Comic Shop News, something that free newsletter that was handed out to comic book shops to promote the upcoming new issues. So this is titled Tundra, and the first thing that, as I recall flipping through here, is about page number 3, we have Vindicator or Guardian sitting there thinking in the empty headquarters about what had been, or what had been the structure for Alpha Flight, Beta Flight, and Gamma Flight. And the thing that I find really cool now looking back on it is it's all there. Byrne had it all laid out. He had the members of each class, each level. He already decided which ones were going to be heroes, which ones were going to be villains. And if you know their characters from later on in the series, you can spot them, that he had them all planned out right here. You can identify them by name. You can decide which ones are going up into Alpha Flight and which ones are dropping into Omega Flight or Gamma Flight, depending on how you want to say it. I really thought that was cool. Looking back on it, you can see how he's got this laid out. Didn't know exactly who the kook was who eventually resurrected Tundra, but this will all become clear in subsequent issues as we take a look at it. This series seems to rely on skulls with various headdress, headbands, and mystic properties. I really like the background between the Bobillard twins, Jean-Claude and I think this is Jean-Marie, is that the name? Jean-Paul, rather. And her name, I'm trying to find where it is. He tries to convince her that Aurora is just as much of her as her other personality, and in fact, she kind of fractures. I love the interplay between Mac and Heather. That really kind of sets a stage as you discover later on that who really organized or called Alpha Flight into being. Well, it's Heather. Heather was the one that was behind all this. She's the one that picked up the cards and loaded them into the deck so that they would all be called. Heather formed Alpha Flight. I like the little sequence with Jug, except Puck here doesn't really have a name yet, but Eugene Judd, he's really, as far as I'm concerned, a little on the offensive side. I wasn't real pleased about him, and I thought perhaps he was going to be a villain. As it turns out, he turns out to be one of the warmest, most gentle people in the entire series. And then they give you a little background on Marina and Tim Smallwood. They give you a little bit on Sasquatch and Snowbird, and just enough to introduce those various characters. And Tundra is a real opponent that they have to work against. And although they don't really unite, they all show up to resist this force of nature. Later on, it will become more clear in the series just why the forces of nature in Canada are so important to this series and to Alpha Flight as well. By the time we get to the end, we see Sasquatch trying to tear pieces out of Tundra, and eventually Shaman causes it to rain. Really don't have a whole lot to say about these characters as they introduce them, but one of the charms of Byrne's scripting is that he is going to select these characters, and if you don't know who they are, he's going to devote an issue or two to their background and show you some of their backstory so that you have a better sense for who they are. And then at the very end, we see Judd showing up, and he is quite upset. He wants to be an Alpha Flight or nothing. And so they start to roughhouse in their rented apartment, and it ends on a very lighthearted note. A nice launch as far as I'm concerned. I really enjoyed this. It was a double-sized issue to premiere, and I think it really did the good job of setting the hook and kept me on for the whole series.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.